Every day for 12 years, I haven't been getting up saying, how can I rewrite the law? I've been getting up for 12 years every day saying, okay, how can I apply this Fourth Amendment precedent to this fact pattern that comes before me? Or how can I apply this First Amendment precedent to this fact pattern that comes before me?
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and it's day two for Judge Brett Kavanaugh in his Supreme Court confirmation hearing. And the theme of the day, judicial independence.
My personal beliefs are not relevant to how I decide cases.
If confirmed to the Supreme Court and as a sitting judge, I owe my loyalty to the Constitution.
The people need to know in this country that the judges are independent and that we're not making decisions based on policy views. Independence comes directly from Article 3 of the Constitution. We are not supposed to be influenced by political pressure from the executive or from the Congress.
We have to stick to the laws passed by Congress. You make the policy, we'll follow the policy direction that you put into the laws that are enacted, passed by the House and Senate, signed by the President.
Whether I agree with that test or not was not the issue before me. I have to follow the precedent of the Supreme Court as it's written.
Independence comes directly from Article 3 of the Constitution. The Constitution establishes me as an independent judge, bound to follow the law as written, the precedents of the Supreme Court as articulated, subject to the rules of stare decisis, and I would do so.
Today's hearings are the first day of questioning from the members of the Senate Judiciary Committee.
As a judge, it is an important precedent of the Supreme Court. By it, I mean Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. Been reaffirmed many times.
Have you ever followed precedent of the Supreme Court when doing so conflicted with your personal beliefs?
Well, my personal beliefs are not relevant to how I decide cases.
What did you base your conclusion that assault weapons are in common use? And what evidence or study did you use to do that?
I faced a decision where, as in every other decision just about on the D.C. Circuit, I had to follow precedent of the Supreme Court. I don't get to pick and choose which Supreme Court precedents I get to follow. I follow them all.
Please tell us what judicial independence means to you, including whether you have any trouble ruling against the president who appointed you and against the executive branch in any case before you.
To begin with, you're correct. No one is above the law in our constitutional system. Under our system of government, the executive branch is subject to the law, subject to the court system, and that's an important part of Federalist 69. It's an important part of the constitutional structure.
Now, very quickly, let me just ask you this. Can a sitting president be required to respond to a subpoena?
I can't give you an answer on that hypothetical question.
So you can't give me an answer on whether a president has to respond to a subpoena from a court of law?
My understanding is that you're asking me to give my view on a potential hypothetical, and that's something that each of the eight justices currently sitting on the Supreme Court, when they're sitting in my seat, declined to decide potential hypothetical cases.
As Democratic senators probe Kavanaugh for his beliefs and Republican senators offer praise, the question remains, how would Kavanaugh act as a Supreme Court justice? While most of the focus has been on his past decisions and writings, Katie Barlow listened to hours of Judge Kavanaugh presiding at oral arguments from his 12 years with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Barlow is an attorney and co-editor of Circuit Breaker, a website covering everything coming out of the D.C. Circuit.
I think what we can glean both from his oral argument style and from his opinions with 12 years on the bench, which is a long time for anyone on the Supreme Court before they get there, is that he's a straightforward conservative. He's a conservative judge, and he will try to carve out the smallest areas possible when dealing with areas where Congress has spoken and areas of clear executive power.
Can you give us a sense, like maybe an example of what that means? Because even the definition of conservative today feels as though it's evolved, if you will.
Sure. I think in the legal sense, it has evolved less so than in the political sense, but I take your point. I think it is helpful to look at a case from his very first day on the bench back in 2006, on September 11th, in fact. And the case is called Jamal Kiemba v. Bush. And it is about an individual named Jamal Kiemba, who was a Ugandan citizen, who was being detained in Guantanamo Bay. And he was afraid that the government was going to transfer him to another country and that that country would torture him. And so he asked the court, can you please require the government to give you 30 days notice before they transfer me so we can deal with any issues related to that transfer? And the lower court said yes, and it came up before the D.C. Circuit. And during oral argument, Kavanaugh explicitly questioned the advocates about the role of Congress here and the role of the president. And he said, isn't this for Congress to decide? If they wanted to, they could craft a rule right now about detainee transfer. And they know how to because they've done it before.
And we actually have a clip of Kavanaugh during these oral arguments, if we want to take a listen to that and then hear your reaction to that.
In Hamdan, the court found that the president's exercise of his authority was constrained by what Congress had done. It was in conflict with what Congress had done. Here we have a situation that's really the opposite. Congress has not prescribed any particular rules governing the detainees. My question is, do you agree that Congress has that authority to enact such rules consistent with Congress's authority and the president's authority?
He spoke exactly the way he wrote his opinion. So the court actually said, it is not the court's role to second guess the executive's power here, particularly during wartime when it's at its apex. But he wrote in the very first part of his opinion, his concurrence, that Congress can speak here and that nothing that the court ordered prevents Congress from creating a carve-out, creating a rule governing military detainees in this context. And he telegraphed that right off the bat in his first question to the advocate.
The question of the scope of executive power in this case seems to be one that's quite important this week before the Senate, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, is an issue that is still coming up before the courts right now. There is a detainee that's being held on a military base abroad right now and has not been able to get his petition heard in the U.S. courts. It's a case called Doe v. Mattis. And the question is whether or not the president can transfer him to the custody of the country that he's in. And this case has been percolating in the D.C. federal courts for nearly a year at this point. It's still an issue, the president's wartime roles, but also the president's role in appointing these federal judges. This president has appointed a huge percentage of federal judges that will impact the future of jurisprudence in this country for years to come. And how President Trump fits in that role is certainly something that's going to come up in the next few days.
I'm talking to Katie Barlow of Circuit Breaker about what we can learn by listening to Judge Kavanaugh from his time on the D.C. Circuit, and we're here on The Takeaway. Katie, are there any cases that Kavanaugh heard in the D.C. Circuit that could potentially reach the Supreme Court?
Absolutely. There are a couple. The first is a case called Archdiocese of Washington v. WMATA, and colloquially we call it the Transit Ad Wars. And the Catholic Church wanted to put up a Christmas ad on Washington Transit buses, WMATA buses. And the WMATA system said no because it has a policy against religious-themed ads. And the Catholic Church sued and said, you can't do that. That violates our First Amendment right to speak and in part is religious discrimination. And the case came before the D.C. Circuit. Judge Kavanaugh was actually on the panel in that case and was very heavy-hitting in his questioning of both sides. The court eventually ruled after Kavanaugh was appointed that the WMATA policy could stand, that they could tell the Catholic Church no. Interestingly, Judge Kavanaugh did not participate in the opinion because after his nomination to the Supreme Court, he stepped away from all of his open cases. And so it will be interesting to see how Kavanaugh handles that at the Supreme Court, because there is no requirement that Supreme Court justices recuse in any case. It's entirely up to them.
And we have a very short clip of Kavanaugh actually during these arguments that we can take a listen to.
The idea that you can say no churches need apply is odious to our Constitution.
Yes, Kavanaugh was very clear in that oral argument that he had a hard time taking the transit authority's word on their policy against religious ads and their policy against issue-oriented ads. He seemed deeply offended by that on behalf of the First Amendment.
What's Kavanaugh's style? Is he combative when he's on the bench?
So it's interesting. I think that clip you just heard, he sounded a little combative, and I think at times he is when he's trying to get a point across, and many times he will say his argument from the bench. But he also is known to help out oral advocates on both sides when they appear to be struggling, or as I've heard, when he thinks he can articulate the argument better than they can.
And we have another clip from Kavanaugh in 2011 where he's helping to reframe the FBI's lawyer in a case about the court's ability to review an FBI decision regarding security clearance. Let's take a listen.
The allegation is kind of a gateway to a trial, and that's a big burden, and therefore that in turn is a chill. That's your theory, or am I...
That's absolutely our argument, Your Honor.
Of course, the trial.
And stated more succinctly and better than I have been able to thus far.
So there are times when an oral advocate just either doesn't understand a question or is fielding multiple questions at once or is taking heavy fire from a particular judge and can get caught up. And from what I've heard from advocates that have practiced before Kavanaugh, that sometimes he will lob a softball their way or he will do what he did in this case and re-articulate their argument or redirect them to a new point entirely. And all of those things are helpful from an advocate's perspective because it re-centers their mind on the task at hand.
Katie Barlow is an attorney and the co-editor of Circuit Breaker, an analysis website covering everything coming out of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit. Katie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much.